Hello and welcome to Growing Up B2B. I'm Ed D'Elia, president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. For over 60 years, and now across two generations, we've been helping B2B companies achieve next-level growth through brand distinction, quality lead generation, and sales enablement. Growing Up B2B was created for family business leaders who are passionate about growth, legacy, and making a lasting impact. Whether it's a multi-generational legacy or multiple family members working together, there's something truly magical about blending business with family. And we want to celebrate that right here on Growing Up B2B. So be sure to stick around to the end of the show and find out how you can be our next guest. Okay, let's get into it. Hello and welcome to another episode of Growing Up B2B. I'm your host, Ed D'Elia. I'm the second generation president of D'Elia Associates, the place where B2B brands go to grow. Today, I'm speaking with Bobby Ring, president and CEO of Meyer & DePue, one of New Jersey's most respected names in heating, cooling, and indoor comfort solutions, serving both residential and commercial customers since 1953. Bobby represents the second generation of Ring family leadership, having taken the reins from his late father, Robert J. Ring. And under Bobby's guidance, the company has grown its reputation for exceptional service, technical excellence, and community leadership. Beyond business, Bobby is an Eagle Scout, a longtime volunteer firefighter, and a living organ donor, having given one of his kidneys to his late sister years ago, an experience that led to his deep involvement with the New Jersey Sharing Network Foundation. Bobby, it's great to have you on today. Welcome to Growing Up B2B.
Thanks, Ed. Appreciate you having me. It's great to get together.
Absolutely. So let's start at the beginning, Bobby. What are some of your earliest memories of your father working at Meyer & DePue?
Oh, wow. My dad started working in the company that I now own when I was 3 weeks old.
Oh, my gosh.
Growing up B2B and growing up M&D, Meyer & DePue are one and the same for me. I used to go to the shop with my dad on Saturdays, and I was probably somewhere around 10 years old. He would come in to do some work in the office. I'd play with all the office equipment. Equally glaring in my memory is my mom was a nurse. She worked on weekends, and my dad was the service manager. Back then, there was no cell phones or pagers or anything like that. If someone had a service problem at night or on a weekend, they would call the office, and the answering service would take the message, and then they would call my dad at home, and he'd answer the home phone. And it was on more than one occasion that my two sisters, my brother — I'm the oldest of four — the four of us would hop in the back of my dad's van and ride around the back of the van while he drove to a service call. And we had a lot of 7-Eleven stores that were accounts back then. The promise was if we behaved ourselves that he'd buy us a Slurpee when we were done. That was my first service call experience.
So for me, it was Star Wars toys. That's how my dad would bribe me to come into the office and help, like, collate press kits and stuff. He said, I'll get you a Star Wars toy. How about that? I'm like, okay, you got me.
Yeah.
We were cheap back in the day.
And Mr. Meyer, who was one of the founders of the company, he would often be in the office on a Saturday. And this is the story of a great connection that he made, and something I always remember when I'm speaking to employees and their families. There was a greasy spoon next to the office, and he'd give me the money to go over and pick up lunch for everybody and always get involved in a conversation with me. And I was learning how to swim, so I was probably all 8 or 9 years old. And sure enough, later that summer, when my father must have mentioned to him that I had passed my swim test for Boy Scout camp or whatever, I don't know, I got a card in the mail from Mr. Meyer with a $5 bill in it saying, hey, congratulations, I hear you learned how to swim.
Oh, wow.
And just pointed out to me the importance of and the long-term impact, because this is 50 years ago, more than 50 years ago, the long-term impact something like that can have on somebody.
Wow.
That's an important lesson. Yeah.
That's amazing. So at some point then, your father then acquired the business from the original owners. Is that correct?
Yes. Mr. DePue retired in the late 60s, and Mr. Meyer sold the business to my father and another gentleman when I graduated from high school. And then I came to work for the two of them when I got out of college. My father and I bought his partner out back in 1998.
Okay.
My father very quickly passed away from colon cancer in 2011. And I was in the process of buying him out. He had actually retired in 2006. I was in the process of buying him out. So when he passed away, I bought my mom out. And since then, I've been the sole owner. But my wife, Pam, and my son, Tom, both work in the business, along with about 45 to 50 other people.
Awesome. So when did you, and I'm going back a little bit further, and maybe it wasn't at age six or maybe at age 10, but when did you start to have notions of, I think I'd like to be part of this business? Roughly, when was that? And talk a little bit about what your thought process was like.
I'm going to be totally honest with you. I was looking for something to do. And my dad said, why don't you come into the office? And actually, the first week, I wasn't working in the office. I was actually for quite a while, I wasn't working in the office. I was the parts runner. I was the gopher. Go pick these parts and materials up here, take them there, clean the shop, empty the trash, wash the vans, a little bit of everything. And I must have expressed some interest in to my dad in getting involved in other things. So I started actually pricing up the handwritten paper service tickets. And my father taught me how to order parts for repairs and parts for inventory. Our books were 100% manual back then. I'm talking green ledger books with the analysis pads.
I remember.
3 foot wide, 24 column analysis pads. And our bookkeeper was a great woman named Mrs. Odell. And I'll never forget, I went to a program. After I'd been there for a while, my father sent me to a program that one of the manufacturers sponsored. It was called the How to Run a Contracting Business. And he was talking about bookkeepers. He says, their names were all Midge, Madge, or Marge. And of course, ours was Marjorie. So it worked out. He said, a blue-haired woman named Midge, Madge, or Marge. We had a blue-haired woman named Marjorie. But Mrs. Odell had been there for a very long time, was a very loyal employee, but she was pretty set in her ways. And my father and his partner, Al, were looking to do things a little bit differently. You may have heard of one counting systems, and I'm not going to get into a lengthy detail about it, but instead of writing things many times in many different places to accomplish the same thing, it was a system called OneWrite. And Mrs. Odell referred to me as a smart-ass college kid when I brought that into the company, because she was very happy keeping what we had. And then we later got, 1981, we got an IBM PC XT.
Wow.
Two floppy drives. And we started using, it wasn't, back then we weren't, we were using Lotus 1-2-3 to make a spreadsheet. And we started to departmentalize our financial statement. So we had the service department and the installation department. That helped resolve some differences that my father and his partner had with one another over what was the most profitable part of the business. As it turned out, the gross margin, the service business, were much better than the installation business. But the volume was much greater in the installation business than it was in the service business. So that's when it was decided, let's focus on, concentrate on growing our service business, starting to sell service plans where we could come out and take care of people's systems on a regular basis. You got to be proactive instead of reactive. And that turns out to be probably one of the greatest measures of a company's value and success is the number of service plans they have. It's like an annuity ongoing. Over the years, we've changed from plans that all expired on the same day to allowing people to buy at any time. Yeah. Now we have monthly service plans. A lot of different changes have taken place over the years.
Oh, for sure. For sure. So you came in at a fairly young age. At what point did you say, yeah, this is what I'm going to do? Was it pretty immediate, Bobby, or was there a discovery there? Did you come in with any trepidation, or were you like all in from the start?
Yeah, truth be told, I didn't deliberately leave this out. I just usually overlook it because it wasn't important. It's not important now. It was important at the time. I left the company for 4 years. My father and his partner had some disagreement, and I would always be in the middle of that. It just wasn't comfortable for me. So I went to work for a manufacturer, and it was national sales manager for a company that manufactures zone controls for heating and air conditioning systems. And they were based right here in New Jersey. So that was a tremendous experience for me as well. I got to go to many different places throughout the country, in Canada, wholesalers, distributors, other manufacturers. I saw a lot of things, learned a lot. And my father called me up one day and he said, hey, listen, someone made an offer to buy the business from Al and I, and he wasn't ready to retire, but Al was. He said, would you be interested in coming back to the company, becoming my partner? And the two of us will buy Al out. You'll end up owning 25% of the company. I'll end up owning 75% of the company. And we'll go from there. That's what I did. And that was 1998. And I came back and began immediately getting involved in the management of the company, the sales operation, and helping my dad take things to the next level to some extent.
Did you find that some of what you learned when you were away at a larger entity, was some of that learning, or to what extent was that learning transferable?
A lot of it was, because I was, as part of my job, I was primarily calling on contractors in their places of business, frequently conducting training classes for them, for their salespeople, for their installation technicians, for their service technicians, and learned a lot about how companies in other parts of the country run things. And there's nothing better than going into a company
yeah.
to see how it's run. And there were times when I was in rural parts of the country and their shop was run out of a barn on a farm. And I'm sitting with three guys named and teaching them about the products that we sold then. But there was times when I was speaking to 150 people in a hotel ballroom that had come from three states to hear what I had to talk about. So it was always fascinating to me. I also got to travel to some places that I wouldn't have traveled to under normal circumstances.
What amazing
Wisconsin. Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have to tell you, I was in Green Bay, Wisconsin, and I went to a Holiday Inn Holodome, if you remember those, and had three Long Island iced teas. And I was my first, I can't remember the name of it. Now, what do they call it when you sing in front of
karaoke
out loud in a bar? Karaoke, yes, was my first karaoke experience. So that was an important lesson I learned as well that I would not have gotten if I had stayed here for those 4 years.
Doing karaoke or don't drink three Long Island iced teas?
I think they're mutually exclusive.
That's funny. So let's talk about your late father for a moment. Very well-regarded man in the industry, very well-regarded as well in the community. Like all of us who are multi-gens, there's a lot that we take from that previous generation, the good and the bad. But what are some of the lessons that you learned from your dad that you see yourself carrying forward even today?
It's funny. I ran into somebody just over this past weekend that I hadn't seen in a long time and knew my dad pretty well. And he mentioned a phrase that a lot of people use to describe my dad, and that's a gentle giant. As you said, I'm little Bob. I'm only 6 foot six. My dad was 6 foot eight. I have to help people understand that sometimes. But my dad was a very serious man. There were very few times in my young adulthood did I get a, hey, good job. Later on in life, I got a lot more of those from him as maybe he appreciated me more. I don't know. Or maybe I was just finally doing a better job and he decided I was worthy of praise. But my dad was not the first one to say a lot of things, but he was the first one that I heard say them. So one of them is a job worth doing is a job worth doing. And when he passed away, I had made a bronze plaque of an image of him and put on the front of our office here with that phrase on it. And I point that out to all the new employees that come in that's my dad. And this is what he taught me. And I'm hoping that you can learn to work that way as well. Because he said, why doesn't we always seem to have time to go back and do it right the first time? Second time, why didn't we take the time to do it right the first time? That was one of his, and like I said, he wasn't the first guy to coin that, but he was the first one I heard say it. So that stuck with me. My dad was a very organized person. He and his partner were like the yin and the yang. Al would sell a commercial project and my father would manage it. Mm-hmm. He would get all the materials and resources together and supervise the labor to make it happen. And my father wasn't as good at selling and Al certainly wasn't as good as my father at running the job. So they worked really well together. Mm-hmm. So I learned from my father about the importance of being prepared. And it's no coincidence that's the Boy Scout motto, too. Being prepared for any eventuality, planning ahead. And I've always worked that way throughout my life. I tell my staff, for example, we're blessed to have a federal agency, the National Weather Service, that lets us know what the weather forecast is going to be for the next 10 days. And the next 3 to 5 days is usually pretty accurate. So it should come as no surprise to us when it's very hot out or very cold out, which are two things that drive our business and cause us to have to be in a better position to serve our clients. On a really hot day or a really cold day, the phone's ringing off the hook and we can't possibly employ enough people on those days to take care of everyone that calls us those days and still keep them employed the rest of the year. We have to be prepared for that. So my dad taught me a lot about planning ahead and making sure that whatever you can plan for, you do.
That's awesome. That's awesome. You've been leading Myron DePue now for some time and I'm sure there's so many changes that have happened since, say, your dad's leadership span. What would you say has changed the most? If there was one thing you said, wow, that's wow. If your dad were to walk in today, you'd be like, wow, that's something I didn't expect.
He only died about 11, 12 years ago. So actually 13 or 14 years ago, hasn't been that revolutionary change. Mr. Meyer, on the other hand, coming back from 1979, would say, wow, what's happened with this equipment? The furnaces, for example, a residential furnace has shrunk substantially in size. They're probably about half as tall as they were at one time. Much more efficient. Back then, it was not uncommon to have a furnace that was 55% efficient, which meant that 55% of the heat it produced went into your home, 45% went up the chimney. Wow. Now we sell furnaces that are 97% efficient, Only 3% is exhausted outside the house. And in fact, those flue gassers are so cold, they don't go up the chimney. They go out a plastic pipe on the side of the house. Air conditioning systems, on the other hand, have gotten much larger. And that's because the larger the coil area on an air conditioning system, the more efficient it is. Condensing units that used to be maybe 2 foot square are now maybe 3 feet tall, are now 3.5 to 4 foot square and 5 feet tall, sometimes even taller. Sometimes they're double stacked. The air conditioning coils that go on top of the furnaces inside people's homes are now taller than the furnaces in some cases.
Wow.
The technology there, in terms of the efficiency of the systems, is probably the biggest change. Along with that would be some of the controls technology. Of course, back then, thermostats were all mercury bulbs, a little tube of mercury inside.
Oh, yeah.
When it moved back and forth, it made or broke a switch that would turn the heat or cooling on or off. Now that's all digital and electronic. We have the Wi-Fi thermostats that we can control with our cell phones from around the world, check on what's going on in our house without the need to be there. Those are probably some of the biggest mm-hmm. things that have changed in my lifetime in the business.
Wow. And it would seem that the advancement of technology in your space will just keep going. There's always something new, it would seem.
Yeah, and not even specifically in the HVAC space, but even in the service business space. I mentioned when my father was service manager, there was no answering service. Or excuse me, there was an answering service. There was no pagers or beepers. We had pagers and beepers at one time. And then in 1998, when my father and I became partners, no one, including he and I, had a cell phone. That was just wasn't something.
Yeah.
It was a computer system, but it wasn't a network. We didn't have email. So when you look at some of the stuff that we take for granted now, you know, a technician back in the day would be in your basement and having some difficulty troubleshooting a furnace. And he'd have to walk upstairs and gingerly say, "Mrs. D'Elia, would it be okay if I use your phone to call my office?" "Yeah, sure." "Hello, service manager? Yeah, this is Bobby. I'm in Mr. D'Elia's basement and I can't seem to get this light. What should I do?" "Okay, thanks. Thanks very much, Mr. D'Elia. I'd be totally embarrassed to have to ask that question in front of you." Now we go downstairs in the basement and they're either looking up a YouTube video from the manufacturer's site to help them troubleshoot it better. They're calling a coworker. They're calling someone they used to work with. They don't even work with anymore. What should I do? And the last person they're probably calling is a service manager because they don't want him to know that they don't know how to solve that problem. But that's transposed how people learn. All right.
Yeah.
Because anybody who was doing that back then will tell you that they spent a lot of extra time reading that schematic diagram and going through the installation and operating instructions to make sure they weren't missing something before they called for help. And when you have to figure it out yourself, you learn better. When someone else gives you the answer, you might get the problem solved and get out there more quickly, but you really don't learn from that.
Yeah.
So I try to coach our managers to say, "What do you think you should do? All right. Walk me through your thought process." And that will help people develop the skills they need and the confidence they need to do it right. Because if they're asking me a question, I'm going to say, "You know what? That's exactly what you should do. You had the right answer. You didn't need to call me. See?" Or, "Hey, you know what? I understand why you thought that way, but think about, if I do that, yep, okay. Let me suggest you do it this way instead." And either way, they're learning from it because they're going through the thought process.
So is AI showing up in that process yet, Bobby? Whereas, is there an AI position there where that's part of that learning process to consult AI?
AI hasn't in the segment of the market that we're in. I'm certain in larger commercial buildings, it's going to rear itself there first. The AI involvement in our business right now is more on helping us run a better business. We have AI that listens to our phone calls and summarizes them and color codes them as to whether or not there might be any negative conversation taking place, something we want to follow up on. AI, we're about to deploy AI phone system, AI answering system that will answer our calls after hours and actually book the call into our computer system. So when we come back in the next morning, it's already there for us. We don't have to process it then. And AI will also be used as overflow. So on a day that maybe we're shorthanded because somebody's on vacation or somebody's out sick or on a heavy call day, instead of getting voicemail, AI will answer the call. And AI is just not taking a message. It's handling the call and mm-hmm. it does it very efficiently as well. So it's interesting to see where this is going to go. I just came back from a meeting in Colorado. They had a trade show there. And I'm going to say that fully a third of the exhibitors were AI related. One of the exhibitors was an AI consultant. He would help you evaluate all your AI options and pick the one best for you and your company. So that's a sign that there's a lot of AI out there.
Oh, there sure is. There sure is. And speaking of some of these technological changes, whether it be AI or some of the advancements in the systems themselves, how does does the company decide when is the right time to invest in a certain innovation? And when do you say, hold true to what's proven to work in the past? Like, when do you pick those spots?
I've gotten better at that because I've always been one of those guys that likes to be in the leading edge of technology. Somebody told me once that when you're in the leading edge of technology, sometimes you get your legs cut off because you're out in front of something before it's really ready. We've done that a couple of times. I think the thing that makes me most comfortable in deploying that or getting into the next level of technology is the position the manufacturers have taken. So if a manufacturer of an HVAC system says, hey, we've got this new feature, let me explain it to you, I'm going to be much more enthusiastic to embrace that because they're putting an awful lot of R&D into that, an awful lot of faith into that before they want to throw it out there and make it work. People who come to me with third-party solutions or third-party technology that I can apply to someone else's equipment or someone else's system, I'm a little more reluctant to embrace. I'm looking for more of a proof and concept or some satisfied clients with it. But there's some things that we've done over the years that have been pretty much just out there on the cutting edge. Some have worked out well, some haven't. You never know which one's going to be the next big one without trying them.
Yeah.
And if the risk is low, then there's not a lot of downside to trying it. If there's a higher cost risk or a higher customer dissatisfaction risk associated with it, then we tread a little more lightly.
Cool. So talking about your clientele, so right now, as I understand it, your business involves both residential but also commercial clientele.
Yes.
So talk for a minute about the unique challenges or maybe even the opportunities of managing both residential and commercial under one entity.
Yeah, diversification in our work is good. Just recently, I read an article that one of the banks put out was based upon some comments that Carrier Corporation had made. And Carrier was projecting, this article was published in September of 25. Carrier was projecting that third quarter HVAC residential sales, their sales were going to be down 40% year over year. At the same time, they were reporting that their commercial business, and these are my words, not theirs, was on fire. So that shows you that being involved in both can have a positive effect. I'll give you another example. Residential, typically, there's not a lot of discretionary spending being made for heating and cooling systems in the month of December. But in commercial, there's a lot of businesses that are looking to spend up budget money before year end. We can take advantage of that as well. Commercial, we continue to redefine and narrow down the type of commercial work that we want to work on. There's a wide spectrum of that work. 25 years ago, we were primarily a commercial contractor. We probably did about 70 to 75% commercial work and 25 to 30% residential work. And we've just transitioned out of that over the years. Back then, we were doing work for general contractors. And general contractors aren't bad people, but it's a whole different marketplace, a whole different pricing structure, a whole different situation. It's typically the running joke is the guy that gets the job when he's bidding on a general contractor job is the one who made the biggest mistake in calculating his price. He's the one who got the job. So there's nothing worse than a general contractor calling you up and say, I want to award you the job. I just want you to double check to make sure your price is good, because that means your price is so much lower than everyone else's. They're a little nervous accepting it. That's not where I want to be. And again, this is not universal of all general contractors. And there's some great general contractors out there. But we had the misfortune to work with some that would pay you when they wanted to pay you and not when they should have paid you. Mm. So no down payments on that work. Something called retention. All right. They would retain 10% of every invoice you gave them until the job was all done. And then you could be all done with the job, but they weren't all done with the job. So they weren't getting the retention from their customer. And even though you were done, maybe the plumber wasn't done yet. So the customer wasn't releasing their payment to the general contractor. The general contractor wasn't releasing his payment to me. Whereas in residential, we get a 50% down payment when you sign the contract, and we collect the balance the day we're done. So we've migrated commercially to that type of work too, replacement work, working for the end user, not in the general contractor or construction related activities anymore, fighting in our weight class. My father also told me something, He said, there's nothing we can't do, but plenty we shouldn't. I keep that in mind a lot. The plenty we shouldn't is the part we look to stay out of.
Got it. Another aspect of your business, it is a competitive business, both on the commercial side and residential, but not only to win customers, but also to win talent. Recruiting and retention is a very challenging issue, as I understand it, industry-wide. So what are some ways that you go about attracting and keeping great people when in the marketplace and the talent pool, it's great talent is in short supply?
Yeah, there's a couple things. Number one, whenever we have a new employee join the company, we have a monthly company-wide meeting. I introduce the new employees to the rest of the team, and they ask them to please let us know why they chose to work at our company. And they usually say, you have a great reputation. I wanted to work in a company that values employees and offers better benefits than what I was receiving where I used to work. And invariably, they also tell us that they read our reviews. Very few people want to go to work for a company that's getting bad reviews from their customers. That means that company is not paying attention to doing things the right way, doing the job right the first time. We'll bring that up again. They're more concerned in getting in and getting out and making a quick buck. And that's, I tell people that every now and then you run into a problem with a job, and I end up talking to a customer and I say, listen, I've worked here for 44 years. And I said, I'm not trying to retire by taking advantage of anybody. Been as successful as I have because we've always done the right thing. My job is to make sure that when we're done resolving your problem, that you'll be able to say that, hey, you know what? I highly recommend them. I had a problem, but they stood behind it and they took care of it in a way that I feel really comfortable telling you that you should hire them. And the same applies to people coming to work for us. We've also changed the type of people that we're looking for too. It used to be you always looked for somebody with a lot of experience. So a guy walked in the door with 15 years experience, man, you wanted to hire him in a heartbeat. And there's still some guys that walk in with that kind of experience that I do want to hire. But many of them have been let go by somebody because they weren't working out there. Or we also see a lot of people that used to be in their own business and now want to come to work for us. And it was a time when I used to be attracted to that too. Not so much anymore. If they couldn't succeed owning their own business, how are they going to succeed working for me, working in my business? So the technician we're looking to hire now is a technician that has a great attitude, outstanding, probably number one requirement, outstanding communication skills, all right, and a willingness to learn. So I always say we can teach you how to fix a heating and air conditioning system. We can't teach you what your mom and dad were supposed to teach you, to have a good attitude and to embrace learning. So we'll take technicians that have recently graduated from vocational school and look at them from those perspectives, which ones have good communication, good attitude, and are willing to learn, and we can develop them into what we want them to be.
Cool. Currently, your wife, Pam, still active in the business?
Absolutely.
Okay. And number of years?
My office is on the second floor. She's on the first floor. So we just meet for lunch once or twice a week.
Okay. And now your son, Tom, is involved.
Yes.
So talk about that for him. What's it like? Basically, it's business and family. So building and sustaining a true multi-generation business now with generation three in the building.
Yep. And that's an interesting point of conversation right now, because while I have no plans to retire or to sell the business, some of the options that are before me down the road include turning the business over to my son, much like my father did, where he would use the business and his success in the business to fund paying me over a period of time. Or the other thing that's going on in our industry right now is there's a boatload of private equity people that are buying HVAC businesses for 8 to 12 times EBITDA, which is a phenomenal number, paying you in cash. Some of them ask you to stick around for 6 months to a year to help with the transition, and you walk away with your money. Do I want to do that and hope that they'll want to continue to employ my son, which I suspect they might if he continues to have a key role in the company? Or do I want to have my son buy me out over the next 10 or 15 years? That just exposes me to the 10 or 15 years of what's going to happen in the economy. If the business doesn't do well, will he be able to afford to pay me? And how does that impact me? So it's a bit of a crossroads. But yeah, it's funny how quickly, and I'm sure you feel the same way from time to time, how quickly we begin to realize that we've become our parents. And I'm having the conversations with my son that my father had with me.
Yeah.
So, I'm blessed to have him. He's a great man. He's 35 years old. I have a 38-year-old daughter who's a school teacher. She brought me a nice 4-year-old granddaughter who's the love of my life. And it's great to have family. It really is great to have my wife working in the business. She sees a whole other side of the business that I don't get involved in every day. And it's eyes and ears and represents me well in that area as well.
So when the three of you are, let's just say, not on the same page on an issue, how do those discussions happen in your world, Bobby? So if there is something, I'm not saying you're in a dispute, but let's just say you see something one way, maybe Tom another, maybe Pam another. How do you resolve? What's your method of resolution when there is some differences of opinion, let's say?
Yeah, and that's interesting because on paper, I'm the sole shareholder of the company. So I guess on paper, I get the last word. I take what they both have to say very seriously. Both of them have great ideas. Both of them have seen and heard keen things. Sometimes I have to remind not only them, but some of my other managers too, that there's a way to handle the problem they're seeing, a way not to, and just calm down a little bit, take a step back and look at it from a different perspective. But collaboration is probably the secret to any relationship as it relates to business and marriage. My wife and I obviously live together, get up together, go to work together, work all day together, go home together. It's a long day sometimes. I used to have the same situation with my dad. I would get up, have breakfast with him. He'd make me drive him to work. My wife and I drive in separate cars because she never wants to be tethered to leaving when I want to leave. She wants to leave when she wants to leave.
Of course.
But my dad and I would spend the day together. I'd drive him home, have dinner with him. Those were long days. And there's been some long days here at Meyer and DePue too, but having family involved in the business makes it a lot easier. If I'm not in the office and I know my son is, or I know my wife is, I know that in addition to the other leaders that we have in the company that handle things well, I've got a family member there as well that's always going to be looking at it from that perspective on top of what the other managers are looking at.
Nice. So when you think about the brand, and let's just say you did let the brand sustain under the next generation and there was a transfer, as you look out, and you use the 10-year window, so I'll use it too. You look out 10 years, what would you like to think that the Meyer and DePue name would stand for 10 years out from now?
Yeah, one of the things that it stands for now is that it's a personal, family-owned business that in the face of some of the larger companies that have been bought up by private equity, by PE, still are focusing on serving the customers or serving the employees. I'd want that to continue. One of the things I'm really blessed with is I still have a relationship with Mr. Meyer's children, his twin sons and his daughter. And we speak every now and then, and they just look at what's changed in the company since their father left the company 45, 46 years ago, and give me a lot to feel good about. And I think I'd want to look at Meyer and DePue down the road and feel the same way they do. Wow, look at what the new owner, be it my son or someone else, has done to the company, what level they've taken it to. And who knows what the next new technology is going to be. One of the things I do know is AI is not going to replace a technician going out and repairing your unit. A technician might get some AI-induced diagnostic assistance, but AI is not going to take the defective part out and put the new one in. AI is not going to remove your old furnace, your old boiler, your old air conditioning unit, carry it out to the truck and bring in the new one and connect it up. AI might help us do a better job of starting that up and ensuring it's working as it was designed to. So AI will enhance what we do, but it will never replace what we do. So I hold a lot of hope out for that too.
Do you see, and maybe that as the basis, because I've read and heard some things that are quite staggering, AI integration in companies, people at even the highest of levels. It may pose a threat to their job, their functions, if you will. Yet not in the trades, not like you said. So do you, when you look at the next generation of technicians, do you see more people coming into the trades, or at least into the HVAC trade, or not so much?
No, I think that's swung. Back in the early 80s, we were active participants with several different trade schools, and they'd have an open house and it'd be 50 or 60 kids there looking at the HVAC program. By the late 80s, that was 50 or 60 kids in the IT program and two or three kids in the HVAC program. But I think the focus on blue collar jobs, the focus on not needing to go to college for $100,000 or more, has made some people rethink the trades. We have many technicians that are making six figures and may have gone to school may have spent an 18-month vocational school education might be $15,000 to $20,000 versus $25,000 to $50,000 a year, depending upon where you want to go to college. So most of these kids are not walking out with a big debt to repay. Mm-hmm. Some of them might even be fortunate enough not to have any debt to repay. And most people starting in our business are making $20 to $25 an hour. Technicians can easily make over $100,000 a year with plenty of overtime, with the performance pay, not unusual at all. Now, I think the future for the technicians, the future for employment in our industry is pretty bright. There's awesome. Nationally, there continues to be a very large shortage of HVAC technicians. And now that word, if that word gets out, and guidance counselors, and our industry is trying to get into middle schools and not just high schools, into middle mm-hmm. schools and talk to people, talk to students there about the trades. HVAC, plumbing, electrical, all three of those trades are always going to be a part of your home, always going to be part of every building that you live or work in, and always going to be in demand.
And I would say it's soon blue collar is going to be a bit of a misnomer, because yeah. it would seem that in a lot of both trade as well as industrial occupations, you see these young people starting out making, in some cases, double, if not triple, what a desk job might pay, in irrespective of category. It's definitely a shift.
You could call it hands-on jobs as opposed yes. to office jobs. It's funny, I can remember having conversations with my son when he was a youngster about working with your hands versus working with your mind. And the importance, if you don't want to work with your hands, you better get a good education so you can work with your mind. I was almost speaking to him the opposite of how I should have been speaking to him. It worked out all right in the end.
How is he doing? How is Tom doing? Do you see him making a progression as you did when you look back when you were his age, or is he approaching things differently?
No, I see him very mature and level-headed. The father-son dynamic sometimes, I'll say we bust chops too much. Sometimes we need to do less of that. There's times when he knows I'm being serious and he calms down. But no, he continues to take on more and more responsibility, and he continues to understand the business. There's parts he doesn't understand, but he knows what he doesn't understand. So mm-hmm. once you know what you don't know, then you know when you need to ask for help. Mm-hmm. And that's the important thing. When you just jump into something without knowing what you don't know, then you learn what you didn't know after you've made a perhaps costly mistake that you yeah. could have avoided. So he's well positioned.
That's excellent. That's excellent. You've been a leader in several organizations, a notable one being, I guess, the largest organization in your industry, the ACCA. I believe you were the chairman at one point.
The Air Conditioning Contractors of America.
Yes, yes. And you've also been featured nationally on the Today Show on Dateline. So a bit of notoriety in your journey. So speaking from a position of authority and expertise, as you look ahead, what do you see as the biggest maybe threats or opportunities for your industry as a whole today, Bobby?
They're both a blessing and a curse, and that's energy efficiency standards. The energy efficiency standards have made HVAC systems more efficient, therefore meaning that they cost less to operate, but they cost more to build and more to purchase and more to install. So homeowners are making a larger investment up front to save money on their monthly utility bill. And sometimes, as we've experienced here in New Jersey recently, the large utility increases offset that savings. And we have to remind people that, hey, your bill didn't go down, but your energy consumption did. That what they charge you for that electricity is a higher rate than they did previously. The challenge is going to be the balance between green and common sense. And I don't want to go down a political talk here, but for example, there's talk of eliminating natural gas furnaces. Natural gas is all but new natural gas connections have all been eliminated in New York City, for example. You're opening a new restaurant, you can't get a natural gas stove. You've got to find another way of cooking. And an awful lot of chefs learn to cook on natural gas. They didn't learn to cook on an electric griddle.
Yeah.
I know here in New Jersey, our governor would like to see us all switch to heat pumps, which are 100% electric. There's no natural gas in that. And heat pump technology has changed tremendously and makes that a very viable option. But the cost of electricity continues to climb. So the cost savings is no longer as viable as it once was. Mm-hmm. Natural gas has been pretty steady in cost, where electricity has risen about 25% here in New Jersey just this year.
Wow, I didn't realize that. Wow.
Yeah.
If a young person came to you today and said, hey, I'm thinking about joining the family business. I'm not sure. They're at that crossroads. What would be a piece of advice you might give them to make that decision?
First, I'd want to know whether they were coming to the business from the briefcase or from the toolbox. I came into the business primarily with the briefcase, not with the toolbox. I was never really employed as a technician. I was involved in the management of the company. And folks with toolbox skills and briefcase skills are both needed. The folks with the briefcase skills clearly understand and know that they need to hire someone with the toolbox skills to get the work done. Unfortunately, the guys with the toolbox skills or that come into the business with the toolbox skills don't always immediately recognize that they need to have someone at least advising them with the briefcase skills, advising them understanding pricing, for example. I would advise someone entering the business to make sure that they had a good business coach, a person, and maybe if they're coming into the family business, that coach exists there. If your question is specifically about getting into the family dynamic, then I would say it's really important to have upfront, honest, and frank discussions about what your role is, what it looks like in the future. I know when my dad passed away, I was worried about what my brother and sisters were going to think. I only had one sister then. My brother and sister were going to think about how was the ownership of the business transferred to me. Did dad just give it to me or did I buy it from him? So that dynamic comes into play too. The other is, what if all the family members are involved in the business? I was, some say fortunate, some say unfortunate, to be the only family member involved in the business. I've spoken with a lot of people, have multiple family members involved in the business, and it's just very complicated. And it's very rare that family businesses with multiple family members in it have smooth sailing all the time. There's usually a dominant person that's leading it and others who support that person, but there can be a lot of conflict. Yeah, so it's just important to understand who's who and what's what. I've got a great friend who recently sold his business, and he and his two brothers were involved in the business. He was the president of the company. He ran it. One worked as a technician. One worked as a salesperson. And they bought the business from their father and their uncle. And they continued to operate the business and earned a salary commensurate with their responsibilities. When it came time to distributing profits at year end, they were equal partners. But they weren't all equally paid because they weren't all doing exactly the same job in their day-to-day activities. And that's a credit to them that they were able to work that out. And I think that's really important in any organization. Just define all that up front. Understand what your role is and what your future looks like. Don't make the assumption that mom or dad's going to give me the business or mom or dad's going to sell me the business. They're not going to sell it to my brother or sister. I think that's a bad path to go down.
That's some great advice. Thank you for that. That's awesome.
Yep.
The last question, Bobby, if one of our listeners wanted to learn more about you and your story or learn more about Myron Depew, what's the best way for them to connect?
There's a couple. I'm on LinkedIn. Myron Depew's website is myer-depew.com, myer-depew.com. And I'm happy to take an email from anybody too. That's Bobby, B-O-B-B-Y. And again, myer-depew.com, B-O-B-B-Y at M-E-Y-E-R.
depew.com. Got it. Thank you.
And are we gonna acknowledge that we've known each other for 21 years?
We certainly can. Has it been 21?
Yes, it has. I mentioned, Ed, just before we got started, that I had a full head of hair and his was much darker when we met.
Thank you for that.
You're welcome.
Hey, gosh, thanks so much, Bobby, for joining us and being here on Growing Up B2B. It's always an inspiration to talk to you. It always has been across all the years we've known each other, but especially in this venue, when we hear about legacy and how you have continued to adapt and innovate and continue to serve that customer audience that you're serving today, both on the commercial side and the residential side. Again, we've been speaking with Bobby Ring, President and CEO of Myron Depew, and I'm your host, Ed D'Elia, and this has been another episode of Growing Up B2B. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next time. Bobby, thanks so much for being with us today.
Thanks for having me, Ed. Take care.
Take care. Hey, thanks so much for tuning into Growing Up B2B. To explore more episodes and insights, visit podcast.delianet.com. And if you've enjoyed this episode, please give us a rating or review on your podcast platform of choice. Having worked with hundreds of family-led businesses across my career, And being a second-generation leader myself, I'm on a mission to help every family business I meet achieve next-level growth for their organization. So feel free also to connect with me on LinkedIn and let's support each other. You can also find out more about my company at DeliaNet.com. Again, I'm your host, Ed Delia, and thanks so much for joining us today. Take care.